This program is brought to you by the Kentucky Women Writers Conference on iTunes U at the University of Kentucky in Lexington. For more information on the conference and to access our complete audio archive, visit us online at KentuckyWomenWriters.org. Thank you.
Thank you. Hello. So as Erin mentioned, Erin introduces another. Thank you very much, Erin. I'm currently a literary agent, also doing book publicity. So for Rob Weisbach Creative Management, and this is my name, and this is my email address, all of which will possibly be important to you later. And then those are Publishers Marketplace and Literary Marketplace. I will get to in just a second, but just wanted to put them up there because sometimes, you know, it's good to have those notes up there. So today I'm talking about agenting, how to find them, keep them, and be inspired. I think because all of you are here, you're probably all interested in having an agent perhaps, or maybe some of you already have agents or whatever. But what I thought we should do before we get into anything is talk about what an agent is. I think a lot of people think they know what an agent is and what an agent does, but let's maybe walk through it and we'll talk about it a little bit. So today, nowadays in publishing, it used to be that you could write a book, you could send it to an editor at Random House, they'll read it, they'll publish it, and that's how it is. And now big publishers, you can't send unsolicited manuscripts. They'll actually send it back to you. And oftentimes that is a very difficult thing. That's, you know, you may have written the best book, you may have written The Great Gatsby, but it doesn't matter because they just don't accept it. And so agents have become sort of the gatekeepers to that world. What's also great is that agents give a lot of hands-on help, editing, putting you in touch with outside editors that might help you shape things. They might help you shape things depending on what kind of agent you have. And working very closely with you, and they become sort of your first teammate in getting your work published. And they might also give you, depending on the agent, there are lots of different agents out there. Depending on the agent, they might also help you set up a platform, which I'll get to in a minute about what platforms are, but help you get a platform for creating, a name for yourself, getting out there. So the next step would be, so we've sort of identified what an agent is. So how do you find an agent? And that's where Publishers Marketplace and Literary Marketplace will come in handy. Publishers Marketplace is a website. And it's www.publishersmarketplace.com. And I think you can get the information for free, or you can pay $20 a month if you want to look, get sort of an expanded look. And what is in Publishers Marketplace is all of the deals that take place. So every time an agent sells a book to Random House or Penguin or Grey Wolf Press or any of those, it appears in Publishers Marketplace. So not only is it a great place to have a directory of agents, which they very much have, but it's also a great place to say, okay, my book is, you know, a novel sort of akin to Water for Elephants. Okay, who was the agent for Sarah Grun? Who bought that book at Algonquin originally? Who's publishing her now for her new book, The Ape House? Okay, those are the people I want to go after because my book is very much like this. So that's another way to sort of start to look at how you should be positioning your book. And the hard thing about being a writer is that, particularly in today's day and age, you're not just a writer anymore. You also have to be a marketer. You also have to be a publicist, and you have to be a salesperson. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today, about how you can help sell yourself, how you can sell yourself to an agent who then, you know, helps you tighten up what your sales pitch is to get you to the next level, and sort of go from there. And I'm going to leave plenty of time for questions because I think you probably all have a lot of questions. So I'll just sort of walk through this a little bit. So you're looking on Publishers Marketplace, Literary Marketplace. Literary Marketplace is actually like a big directory. I don't actually know if they have an online component, but it's a big directory, and it's LMP, the letters L, M, and P. You can find it in pretty much any reference section of a library. Also, a lot of bookstores sell it, but that's a good place to go. So you're looking for an agent. So what to look for? So we've already talked about you sort of thinking about what your book is like. So you write a novel, you write a memoir, whatever it is. Try and think of two or three books that are sort of similar to yours. Books that you, you know, were inspired by when you were writing your book. Books that you think may, you know, you, your book might reach the same audience as those books, something like that. So then you look at what those, you know, the agents for those books in Publishers Marketplace. You might also say, you look in Publishers Marketplace and say, these agents represent fiction. We're going to use fiction as an example just because that tends to be easier. So you say, okay, these agents represent fiction, and then what do you do now? Okay, you've identified the agents that you want. So then that's when you start sending a query letter. The number one thing I have to say is don't send the same letter to everybody. I mean, you can send a letter with sort of similar things, like this is the plot of my book, but really find out what those agents are looking for. Look at them personally, look at what their books, what books that they've published, you know, what books they, what writers they work with, because everybody gets sort of that same form email, and you're like, okay, you don't care about me, I don't care about you. You know, it's busy. We get a lot of, I get a lot of submissions every day, and I want something that stands out. I want something to say, you've taken the time to figure out what I'm about. And that gives me an opportunity to say, okay, I'm going to take a look at what you're about. I'm going to take a look at what you're doing. The other thing that I think is important is finding an agent that would support your needs. So think about what kind of writer you are. There are a lot of writers who are very good at deadlines and writing their own, you know, they don't need a lot of editing, they don't need a lot of help, they don't need a lot of support. So find an agent that's like that, and maybe in that first query letter say, here's my, I'm in a writing group, I have an outside editor, I've worked with a lot of other writers, whatever it is. But say up front, this is who I am, this is what I am, this is why I need you. You know, that's very helpful for an agent to say, okay, this person is not going to be somebody I have to talk to 10 times a day, or this is a person that I love and I'm willing to talk to 10 times a day. You know, it's better to say, this is who I am up front, and be very clear and very honest. And when you're looking at agents, you might also think, what do I need? You know, what kind of, do I need an agent who, and nowadays there are a lot of people who are going from other parts of the industry into agenting. I was a publicist for a long time, and now I'm an agent. But so if you need intense editing work, I'm probably not your girl. I was never an editor, although I do know what it is to edit, and I'm a reader, so I know what readers want, but I don't do intense line editing, as Aaron knows. but I can help you shape your story. So if there's an editor who is now an agent, that might be the person that you want to talk to. So think about that. That's a really an important thing for you as a writer to think about when you're thinking of an agent. And then now we'll sort of talk about how to get an agent interested. So I've already talked about the sort of query letter, but I'm going to digress for a second and talk about publicity. So I came from publicity, and the hardest thing a writer has to do is sell themselves, because usually a writer is a person who sits in a room by themselves and writes. And maybe you have a writing group, and maybe you have some support from friends and family, and maybe you have submitted your work to literary magazines, and maybe you have published journalism in the local newspaper, whatever. You probably have some feedback, but probably not enough. And you probably, you know, maybe don't have the best, you're not as objective about your work. So that's sort of the sort of starting point now, I would say, is that in this day and age of publishing, you have to have a platform. So I'll talk a little bit about platforms. So whenever I submit a book, I always have to talk to the editor about who this writer is, why they're important, and why they should pay attention. That's something that you will have to do to agents as well. because there's just, that's how the industry is now. It's not enough that you've written a great book. We need to know how you're going to sell it. We need to know how you're going to work your audience. So for instance, I just submitted a novel and the writer works for the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. She also does a speaking tour with the State Department, and she's great friends with Vendela Vida, who's a novelist married to Dave Eggers. So she came in with this package and it was like, oh, okay, that's a lot easier. And the book happened to be good as well. So there was a lot of platform there already. And her book was about a young woman in Washington. So we could play off that, so her Washington connections in order to do that. So when you're looking at your book, think about, so we'll talk about fiction, nonfiction, and poetry is a little bit harder. So we'll just talk about fiction and nonfiction. So when you're thinking about your platform, there are a few things to think about. Blogging. So it's a good thing anyway to write every day, whether it's about your book, whether it's for your book, or whether it's for yourself, or whether it's for other people, whatever it is. Just the routine of writing every day keeps you fresh as a writer. It helps you hone your craft. It helps you think about it a little bit more. So blogging has become a popular way to build a platform. If you can get some followers, if you can write something that's compelling, if you can get anybody to pay attention. That's a lot of books right now have started from blogs. So there's a book out that a friend of mine published called Stuff White People Like, which was a blog, and it's very funny. He would talk about scarves in the summer, and The New Yorker was one, and you know, and it's meant to be funny, but people loved it. And my friend paid six figures for this book that was all published already online. Yeah, there were maybe 10 new entries. But this writer, Christian Lander, made a lot of money because he had a funny blog. So there are things, obviously, I'm not saying everybody will have a funny blog that will be turned into a six-figure book, but I'm saying that that is a good way to start it and start building an audience. Another thing to do is Facebook, Twittering, all of those are tweeting, Twitter. So all of those things, if that is something you are comfortable with, connecting to people. So I for some writers that I do publicity for, I create Facebook pages. So I create a Facebook page either for them or for the book, and then I connect that page to local bookstores around the country. So Joseph Beth, Tattered Cover in Denver, Powell's in Portland, stuff like that. I connect them to writers that have similar kinds of books. So then we start commenting on, you know, from, well, I comment. Don't tell anybody, it's me. But it looks like my writer is commenting on this person's page, and so then their fans see them, say, what's that all about, and go back to that page. And it's all about driving people to follow you, to support you, because then you have a built-in audience to tap into. One of the things that I did at Scribner years ago was, and I think they probably still do it, but you would collect names on a newsletter, and then when a writer had a new book out, you would email them this newsletter saying, you know, Stephen King has a new book out, and then 300,000 people would go out to the store the next day and buy the book. And that's what publishers are trying to do. Let's pull together this list of people that can support you, and that when you have a book, they will go out and buy it. Another thing to do for building a platform is publish your writing. So there are a few ways to do that. If you're a fiction writer, there are a million literary journals, literary magazines, various places. It's not just the New Yorker and Paris Review. There are lots of literary journals around the country. I'll write it on the board. There's another resource that's called the Writer's Market. And they update it every year, and I'll write it on the board in just a sec. But what they do is it says, like, these are the publications that accept submissions. This is what they're looking for. This is who you send it to. So it's just a good way to sort of get your name out there, start publishing things. A lot of editors I know look for writers who have been published already, because that means you've been through the editorial process at least once. You've learned to do that. You might have some followers. You might have some people who are interested in you. That's something to think about. Hold on, I'll write it up there. Can everybody read my handwriting? Is it okay? The other thing is to think about a hook. What is your hook? So, for instance, you've written a memoir about being the mother of an autistic son. We'll just random. So you've written a book, and a good thing to think about is who is going to be the audience for this? Probably other mothers of autistic children. So how do you find those people? Are there support groups? Should you connect yourself to a national autism organization? Are there other connections that you can make so that when you send your proposal to an editor, to an agent, that agent says, oh, you already have this relationship. Okay, great. So it's going to make it a lot easier for us when we publish this book to be able to call on them and say, hey, let's do an event. Hey, will you send something out in your monthly newsletter? Hey, will you do something about it in the magazine? And that helps you connect your book to an audience that would be supportive and ultimately buy the book. The other thing that I was talking about were personal connections. I highly recommend, this is in my miscellaneous section later, but I'm going to say it now. I highly recommend knowing other writers. Look in this room. There might be some friends, new friends. If you don't already have a writer's group, it's always great to talk to other writers because you're probably going through shared experiences. I think being a writer is incredibly difficult sometimes. It's very isolating. It's hard work. It's sometimes very emotional if you're writing a memoir, if you're writing something very personal. Sometimes can be very hard. It's good to have people around you that know what that's like, that can probably also give you some advice. And if you have any, if those writers happen to be famous, that also helps. They promise you a blurb if your book is ever published. Good, that's helpful. Helpful to have. The other thing I would say is booksellers. So, you know, when you go into the Joseph Beth, make friends. Find people who will be supportive of your book, who are in your community and beyond. I think that's a really important foundation builder. But no matter what I talk about, the most important thing is that you have you're a good writer and you have a unique story. So those are the things that, I mean, editors and agents, that's the most important thing that they say. It doesn't matter what the story is, as long as the writing is really good. If you have a great story, but the writing isn't so good, they'll probably get you a writer, or they'll get you an editor to sort of shape that. That's sort of the tricky bit. But if you have one or the other, that's a good start. And I do have to say, the most important thing is, and this happened to me with a writer that I work with, we were putting together her proposal, and I said, okay, and for nonfiction books, I don't know if you guys know this, but you don't have to sell it on a finished manuscript, you can sell it on a proposal. And that tends to be sort of like an overview of this is what the book is, some chapter summaries, a sample chapter. And then I always put some marketing and promotion in there because obviously that's where I came from. And so I said, can you come up with some comparative titles for your book? And she put in, I have to think about it, The Bell Jar and something else equally weighty. And I just thought, your book's good, but it's not The Bell Jar. Like, I'm going to send this to an editor and they're going to laugh. Like, think of something, one, contemporary. So, you know, a lot of people, for instance, we were just talking about this book at lunch, but The Glass Castle, Jeanette Wall's memoir. That has become a very popular comparison for a lot of memoirs. I'm trying to think of another book out now. But be realistic in your comparisons, but be sort of, I mean, you don't want to be like your friend's book, unless your friend is Jeanette Walls, but you want it to be a book that has done well, that you can say, okay, this is why my book is similar to that book, but this is why my book is also different. So my book is going to appeal to this audience, but this is why it's different than that book, so that they will buy both. You know, it's not limiting. So that's... Okay, so that's enough about platform for now, I think. We can, if you guys have questions about that, we can take that at the end. So we'll say you found your agent. You found somebody you love, they love you, you're excited. So the number one thing you need to do is establish your working relationship, because sometimes you want more attention, sometimes they want you to work faster. It's good up front to say, this is what I want to do. this is where I want to go. This is how I want to do it. So oftentimes I ask a writer when I first start working with them, what is your end goal for writing this book? Do you want to be on Oprah? Do you want to, you know, rapidly running out of time for Oprah? But so quick, write those books, write them right now. Yeah, exactly. So do you want to be on Oprah? Do you want to be rich and famous? Do you want to tell people about being the mother of an autistic child? What is your end goal? Because that is going to help us. I sort of look at the end game and work our way back. Okay, what do we need to do to reach that? What do we need to do? How quickly do we need to turn it around? Hold on. For instance, a writer that I work with is, he's a birder. He goes and looks at birds and is a naturalist. And he lives on the Gulf Coast. And so he had this great idea for a book about, you know, the Gulf Coast and the wake of the oil spill and talking about the environment and things like that. And I was like, write the proposal right now. Like, I don't care if you're wherever you are on vacation, write it right now. Because in 6 months, it's not going to mean anything. Like, we have to sell it right now. We have to publish it in 6 months. Like, we've got to write it immediately because it's timely. It's something we have to do. And he was like, oh, I don't know if we can do it in time. And I said, well, then I don't know if I can sell it. Like, that's the timeliness of that. And so it's always just better to think about what are you doing and where are you going and what's important. So I always think that if your agent doesn't ask you that, you should bring it up. You should say, just want to take a second and tell you, here's why I want to write this. Here's what I hope to do in publishing this book. And the other part of it too is ask your agent if they are a slow reader or a fast reader. So I'm a fast reader, but I tend to read like 20 things at once. So I read 50 pages of it, of 20 things, and then I come back and I read 50 more pages, and then I read 50. So it takes me a long time to sort of get back to people. And that tends to be something that people are like, I talked to you a month ago. Where are we? What's going on? And I'm like, oh, sorry. You know, I've been reading a bunch of other things. Yes, I'm with you. I'm sorry. So establish then the time frame in which you will work and try and stick to that both on your end and on the agent's end, because sometimes that's the tricky side. And always make sure that you're communicating too, because I think that's keeping the form of the, you know, the lines of communication open are really important, because you need to be moving forward on your writing. They need to be moving forward on getting the book ready to send out and figure out where that's going. The other thing that I would say is that sometimes, you know, as I was mentioning, I'm not an editor. I can help shape something. I can help work together on something. Sometimes there's benefit in having an outside editor. There are a lot of editors out there. In Publishers Marketplace, you can find editors as well. So if you just need, sometimes people just, you can pay them a couple $100 to read it and give you some advice. So if you're having trouble getting an agent, that might be a way to start. If your agent is sort of like, it's good, but there's some things, I don't really know. And having somebody else that you can just, that's what they do. That's all they do. A lot of them have worked in-house. I work with a bunch of editors who used to work at Random House and HarperCollins and stuff. And so they all used to be acquiring editors. They know what editors in-house are looking for, so they know how to get your book there. So that's really incredibly helpful and something that if you're sort of struggling, that might be something to consider. This is the most... most important thing, ask questions, but trust your agent. I have one client who likes to second guess me. And I always say, I totally appreciate your opinion. I really value what you're saying. I work in this industry. You are, you know, you're a clammer in Cape Cod. And I appreciate it, but I know the editors. I know the publishers. Like, I appreciate the situation, but I'm just telling you, I know a little bit more than you do. So please ask me all the questions, but don't tell me that I'm wrong. And that has been, that's obviously a personal, issue that I have. But that's something that everybody hears stories, you know, from their friend who's the writer who had this experience. Every experience is different. There are a lot of similarities too. So I definitely think listen to people, take it with a grain of salt. But make sure that if the lines of communication are open with your agent, then you're able to say, okay, this is why I feel like this person. And if you don't trust your agent, that's a bigger issue. Don't work with that person anymore, because if you don't trust them, then, you know, they're carrying your baby through. So you want to make sure that that person is like the most important teammate you'll ever have, you know, spouses and partners aside, but you know, they're your most important teammate. So think about that when you're choosing somebody. Don't just pick the first person that comes along. Think about, why is this person important, and do I trust this person to carry me through my goals? So keeping an agent inspired and keeping yourself inspired. A story never dies, no matter where you are in the editing process. You can write and write and write and write and write. I worked with, when I was at Scribner, I did publicity for a book called What Remains by a woman named Carol Radziwell. And it was all about her relationship with her husband. So she was married to Anthony Radziwell, and who is the cousin of John F. Kennedy Jr. The four of them were good friends. And then in the course of one summer, all three of them died, and she was the only one left. And literally a month before the book is coming out, and the time frame in which a book tends to be published is that you sign the book and a year later the book is published. A month, partly because the book is printed like 2 months from publication date, so it's a very, you know, lengthy process. So literally 1 month before the book was coming out, she was still editing it. And it was like, oh, I got to do this, I got to do this, I got to do this. So it never really dies. It still can change. And even after it's printed, you can, if there's another reprint, you can change it some more. But I think at some point you have to say, this is the best it will be. And so you and your agent, that's a really important thing, is to make sure that you are happy with it, and that it can still live on in other ways. So it could be in publicity that you talk about it and say, you know, this scene was really hard to write in my novel. And, you know, my agent and I went back and forth, and my editor and I went back and forth, and we tried it this way and we tried it that way, and this is the way we went with. But I always think about what would have happened if it had done that. You know, there are ways to keep the story going. There's a way to keep talking about it. The story always evolves. It evolves in your, when you're giving readings and people are talking about it, and there's a perspective that somebody said, like, did you mean this when you wrote this? And you're like, oh, I didn't even think about that. So there's a lot of ways to do it, but at some point you have to, you know, sort of let it go a little bit. So that's a hard thing, because I think in some ways it makes you feel like the story is done and maybe a little dead, and you feel a little sad, and you're sort of, you know, and then it's a mixed bag of emotions. And so think of ways to keep yourself inspired about it. Keep moving, be happy about it, figure out ways to keep it going. The most, you know, moving forward too, once that book is out there, you still have to write. You're not going to be a one book wonder, right? You want to write, you know, for a long time probably. And so think about what your goals are for long term, not just for that book. And be honest with your agent about what you're, you know, when you say, why do I want to write this book? What do I want to start this career doing? This is what I want to do. And what Rob Weisbach Creative Management does, we're a different kind of literary agency in that we represent writers who write books, but we also represent writers who are screenwriters. We represent writers who write for sitcoms. We represent writers who do other things. So it could be, I want to write this, but I work with a writer right now who was the star of a documentary, and he said, okay, well, the documentary was about my time as a soldier in Iraq. Now I want to write the memoir of coming back from war and post-traumatic stress. And then I want to, you know, I want to start this TV show. I want to film another movie. I want to do this. And we will help shepherd him through all of that, because we've come in right in the beginning and said, okay, this is your end goal of, I want to have all these things. All right, first we need to have the book, and the book has to be successful. And then we have to do this, and then we have to build on. So think about that too when you're picking an agent. Is this an agent that can shepherd you through all of the things you want to do? And again, be sort of realistic. I mean, I would like to be Oprah too, but it seems unlikely. And then, yes. And then the other thing I would say is in order to be that, also talk about, come up with your own suggestions and research too. You can say, here's why I think that I should have a sitcom. Or my story is particularly compelling and I know somebody and this is what they did. Come up with your own plan too, because you don't want your agent to be the only person shaping your career. You want to be very much a part of that. You guys are teammates, your partners, work your way through. And that's, I think, a good system. So that sort of wraps up a lot of what I was going to say. But I would say miscellaneous advice, which I already said I would get to. Gain experience. Just write. That's the most important way to do it. Write in a journal. Write a blog. Write. Attend writers' conferences. You're already halfway there. Being around other writers, hearing people talk about writing, makes it less scary, makes it more accessible, makes it seem something you can do. You can. Everybody can write. Just, it's a way of shaping it. It's a way of honing it. It's a way of figuring out what the next step is. That's a great way to do it. Try to publish, even if it's for free, even though we just talked about that. Yes, even if for free, try and get your work out there. Try and get people talking about it, because you don't know how good it is unless, you know, somebody's telling you that. So, and it can't be your mother or your husband or your wife, or it has to be somebody who is not a blood relative, even though their opinion matters too. But your mother will always say your writing is great because she's your mother and that's her job. So that's a good thing to think about, getting your work out there. The writer's group, which I already talked about. As a writer, you will have a lot of strangers. If you publish a book, you will have a lot of strangers telling you what your book is about. It's very invasive. It's often off-putting. I've worked with a lot of writers who have freaked out on stage because they don't like the way that somebody has talked about their book. They don't get it. That's not all what I meant. That's actually the opposite of what I was doing. If you get used to being out there and having strangers talk about your work, you're going to be a lot more comfortable when you're a published writer. It helps you get over also a lot of that insecurity of like, is my work good enough? Is my work, you know, whatever it is. And probably as a writer, the most important advice I can give to you is read. Read. If you are writing fiction, read fiction. Read the writers. I'm not saying be a mimic for the writers that you love, but if you want to write like a writer, read their work. It's the most important thing you can do because it helps you understand how stories get put together. It helps you understand about character development. It helps you understand about, you know, if you're writing nonfiction, how narrative nonfiction works. It just helps you in hone your craft just by reading what they're writing. It's I think the most important thing. I think that's sort of it. Is that, I've blown through that. Does anybody have any questions?
Yes, could you talk some about the young adult market? Because, you know, with Harry Potter, it got so big, and I read a lot of manuscripts for people in workshops being a writer, and they will say, well, I've got a book that's got a young protagonist, but I mean for it that adults would like it too. And so what is a YA book, you know?
Yeah.
The same thing as a juvenile book, and so on. I mean, people don't know what they're aiming for.
Sure. No, absolutely. Yeah. It's funny. I was just talking about, there's a series by a woman named Suzanne Collins, or it's a trilogy. And the first book of, the trilogy is a book called The Hunger Games. So, and the new book Mockingjay came out. I don't know if anybody heard about that, but yeah, in the course of the book, it's the main character is like a 15, 16 year old girl. But it's all about these kids having to fight to the death. It's very violent. It's really violent. And I was like, I can't believe kids read this. Like, I'm an adult reading this. And I'm like, oh, this is too violent for me. Yeah, I think a lot of people think if there's a young character, then it must be for young adults. Or, oh, no, I want adults to pay attention to it. I think it has to do, it's interesting because there are a lot of books that sort of bridge that. Yeah. The young adult market is a lot easier to break into than adult fiction, partly because there are just so many people writing novels. I'm not to discourage anybody, but there are a lot of people write novels, and adult editors for adults in adult imprints and publishers are jaded. A lot of them are. And so if you have a really compelling story that would appeal to young adults, I think that's a way to go. I'm not sure I'm answering your question.
Let me ask one follow-up question on that, because this comes up with authors who are aiming in that direction.
Yeah.
There's
aiming for adult or aiming for young adult?
Who have young protagonists.
Okay.
Which doesn't, in books that don't have a lot of sex, so they wouldn't be, you know, maybe younger. But I've heard that they say, well, children like to read books that are about protagonists a year or two older than they are.
True.
I don't know if that is true.
Mm-hmm.
So that the age you pick for your protagonist then must be important in terms of, like, if you have a more complex writing style, maybe you should up the age of your protagonist some?
I'm not sure that there's a hard, fast rule on that. They do tend to say that it's sort of like kids with older siblings. Like, you want to live the life your older sibling has. So I think, yes, in some ways you want to read, but I mean, there were kids in their 20s reading Harry Potter. I mean, I read Harry Potter.
Sure.
So yeah, everybody did. Who didn't read Harry Potter?
But I just, you know, I see manuscripts and people ask, well, how do you position the heroine?
Sure.
A novel about a young girl growing up, maybe. Should we have a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old?
Yeah. Well, I think it's also, how do you want, it depends. I mean, I think in every case, it's unfortunately probably a case-by-case basis, depending on what that character is doing. Because I don't think, you can't say, I want 10-year-olds to read this and then make her 12. Like, 10-year-olds may not read it, you know? I don't know. It's hard. I'm sorry. I don't have a great answer for that. Yes, you tell them, there's no hard, fast rule. No, I think oftentimes, I would say every character should be 16 or 17, because I just feel, or 15 or 16, because I think that's a pivotal time. It hits more. You can get more. I mean, an 8-year-old could read that, or a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old, and still, you know, or maybe like 14 or 15, depending on the case. I mean, 15, 16 is sort of essentially what kids like to read are adults. You know, adult books, but without real adults. You know, a 15, 16-year-old is like on the verge of adulthood. I mean, not in real life. I mean, they're still kids. But that's like as far ahead in adulthood as a 10-year-old could probably think about. Like, that's really old to them. So that might be a way in.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
Can you talk a little about the children's market in general? And
sure.
In terms of breaking in, like, I've published a number of things in periodicals and journalists things, but I have a children's story. I have no idea. I frankly was surprised that it came out that way. And So how hard is that to get started in? I mean,
sure. Is it a picture book, or what kind of children's story is?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have an illustrator?
Not yet.
Okay. Oftentimes I would say children, I don't know a ton about the children's market, but I think oftentimes it's easier without an illustrator, so that might be something you consider.
They don't want one. They don't want one.
Yeah.
I want to give you a professional illustrator.
Yeah, because particularly if you don't have a name, you know, Eric Carle and John Rocco, and I'm trying to think of some children's writers, but we actually work with an illustrator, and he is often called on to be the name. And, you know, if there's somebody with a great story, and then they say, okay, well, it's another book with the illustrations by this person. So if you have a complex story, I mean, you can send it into, there are lots of agents that represent just children's books. So, I would talk to one of them and say, I have this great story. I don't have an illustrator. You know, here's why I think it would appeal to children. Does that help? Okay.
Who the characters are, or the premise for the book? What is, or is it everything?
It's a short letter. I like to know what the book is. So sort of the premise of the book, not the outcome. Don't give it away. The premise of the book. If there's a particular character, so if you're writing a novel for instance. Yeah, this is the story of Samira Tanweer, and you know, she's had to leave her job, and this is actually the book I was talking about. She's had to leave her job in DC because of some situation, and she has to go back to home to her parents' house in disgrace. And you know, then when she's there, she realizes that, you know, whatever. Yeah, I mean, I would want to know who I should be looking out for, what's the story, and what is sort of the tension? What's the tension of the story? What makes it, is it funny? Is it dramatic? Like, I want to know if I'm going to, so it's as simple as saying the witty and humorous immigrant tale, you know, whatever you want to say. But yeah, I would give me a hint as to if it's funny, if it's not funny, who I should be looking out for and what they're going to do. Yeah, so like a little bit of description. I can talk about that a little bit more. Mm-hmm.
I have memoirs because I had a similar question. The query, mine is about abuse, but it's also about adopting as a single woman and sort of, you know, various platforms. So
yeah.
My question is, with a query, it's really not, I mean, everybody thinks a query is not going to do our book justice.
Sure.
But they're certainly not going to be able, without the proposal and the chapter outline, which I've got compiled, right. You know, they're not going to get really a good idea of it. So
sure.
How do we know which, because that could go four different ways.
Sure. I think at the heart of it, you have to figure out what the overarching theme is. Because I think, you know, as a, you know, think about what is the heart of your story. Is it your story? Is it, you know, is it, what is it? Because there's something that ties everything together that's not just, it's me. It's something that there's a reason you adopted that child. There's a reason that you have that relationship. There's something there. And so I think that's that you have to say, this is the reason, here are the things that happened, or here's who I am. This is this thing that, you know, is the connector of everything. And then because of that, I did this. So it's, I mean, it's sort of hard because you don't always see it, particularly a memoir. It's really, it's sort of tricky to take a step back and say, be objective about your own life and say, okay, this is that thing. And sometimes you need somebody, that's why it's sort of a writing group is sort of helpful, because somebody might say like, hey, you know, when I was reading this, this stuck me. And then you go, oh, I didn't think about
that's
that.
That's really helpful, because it's like, it's really about law and then creating my own family. So that's helpful.
Totally, yeah, good.
I just wanted to make sure that I understood what you were saying earlier. Mm-hmm. So if you look on the publisher's
marketplace
and you had a mystery romance.
Sure.
I have three of them.
Three mystery romances. I love it.
They're all about the same couple. So
oh, good. So a series.
I say that I had those. Mm-hmm. And I do think I'm a pretty good writer now, whether I've got enough tension and those kind of things, I don't know. But what would I do then? Would I just say, what would I do at that point? Like, for example, let me ask you this. Are you still looking for people?
Sure.
Let's just say, though.
That's my email address.
Let's just say I wanted to send it to you. What sure. would I send to you? I mean, would I send you the whole novel?
No.
Or would I send you just an outline?
What I would do is,
can I email it to you?
Yeah, you can email it to me. What I, I didn't tell you guys what I'm interested in, but I'll tell you in a minute. What I would do is I would send a query letter first, and you would say, you know, hi, my name is whatever your name is. I have three books. These are the characters. This is what kind of book it is. If you'd like to see more, you know, the first book, I mean, do they build on each other?
Yes.
Okay.
I want to start with the first one. So the
great.
First one I would tell them more about, but then I could mention that I have already done.
Yeah. You can say, I've already written three of these books. The first one, you know, it's meant to be series. The first one is this. This is what happened. And then, you know, the other two books follow these same characters. Yeah. I would just do, you know, a paragraph about that basic plot. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Been lucky enough to have an agent respond to a query letter and
sure.
then accept a proposal for a nonfiction, and then lucky enough to have a request the manuscript. Do you have that manuscript professionally edited before you send it to them, even if you've gone through critiques and so on?
You don't have to. No, I was just saying sometimes that's very helpful. You know, sometimes it's good to have, and it's good to say to an agent. So, for instance, you have trouble getting agents paying attention. Hiring an editor you know, paying somebody a couple hundred bucks to read your book, give you some advice, and then you can go back to agents and say, Bruce Tracy looked at my manuscript and he helped me do X, Y, and Z. So then you know, you're coming with a name that they might know, you know, it's been professionally edited. So that's just, it's just an example of something you do. Absolutely, you don't have to, absolutely not. But yeah, it might be helpful. And it might help you too. Sometimes, you know, you write long enough and you get too close to it and it's hard to see it and sort of like, no, you know, you're missing that word even. You know, you look at a sentence long enough, you see the word in there, it's not there. And somebody who's fresh to it might say like, oh, you're missing that. So yeah, that's helpful. Yeah. Yep.
Are there professional editors out there that if you saw their name in a query letter, you'd be like, oh, okay, this person.
Yeah, well, yes, they're my friends.
Take more seriously if someone said, and I've, here's my hook into why I pick you, here's the summary, here's me as a writer, and I've had this, I also, as part of my process, have been working with this editor.
Sure. Yeah, there are, yes, there are editors, and this is something actually we were talking about at lunch as well. There are some other things that would be helpful too, if you wanted to, you know, there are editors that names pop out. If you go to writers' colonies, we were talking about writers' colonies at lunch, Yaddo and McDowell are two writers' colonies where you have to submit and they accept you or don't. Those sort of things just help you stand out a little bit. Do you want me to give you the names of editors or is that where you just, no. Yeah, sometimes. Publishers Marketplace is a great place for that. I mean, there are people that I worked with, Bruce Tracy, who I mentioned, Judy Sternlight is another one, and Patty. They're in Publishers Marketplace. They have been big editors. Also, a couple of good resources, Publishers Weekly. You can go online and read almost everything. I would just go on and sort of look at where people are moving. So a lot of times people, if they're editing now, if they're outside editors, it's in there. So it's just helpful to sort of keep that out. But absolutely, it's not required to have an editor. It's just sometimes very helpful.
Thank you.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Regarding your platform, how much of a marketing plan should a writer already come armed with when approaching an agent?
You don't have to come with anything. I just always think that it's a little bit helpful. So I don't know. I think it's helpful to say, so I work with some women who had a blog, and it's 365 Fashion Rehab, that's the name of the blog, and they gave up shopping for a year, so they didn't buy clothes and makeup or home goods for a year, and they had a ton of followers, and they had a big Facebook presence, and they tweeted and stuff like that, so when they came to me, they already had this big platform, and they were on the cover, they're both Canadian, and one lives in Toronto, one lives in San Francisco. The one who lives in San Francisco had published a lot of stuff locally, they'd both been on the cover of the Toronto Star, they'd both been on the CBC doing interviews, so they came armed with all of this stuff. So that was great, but I've also worked with people who have nothing, and you know, it's if the story is compelling enough, you don't need it. I just always think that it's sort of helpful. So I think do whatever you feel most comfortable with. If it doesn't come naturally, it doesn't feel comfortable, you know, then don't do it. So
how much of that do you say in a query letter?
I would just do like one line about it. I would just say, you know, I have, so the writer who gives me a lot of advice and second guesses me, he has a big Facebook following because he has these videos. And so he talks about that a lot. And he said, I have this many Facebook followers. These are the people I know, and stuff like that. It was just one line. And I said, oh, okay, that's good. Good to know. So you don't have to, you know, you want to sell yourself a little bit, but you don't want to be like beating them over the head with, look at how great I am. So it's a delicate balance, but do what you feel comfortable with. I think that's the most important thing. Be comfortable doing it. It's like going to be a little bit uncomfortable because it's maybe not what you're naturally used to, but yeah, sort of tread that line. Yeah.
Please speak a little bit about the difference between like identifying or building a relationship with an agent when you're a writer who is focused in one genre or one type of writing versus a writer who may be doing multiple different things like maybe fiction and script, you know, screenwriting and you want to know that up front as an agent when someone's coming into you, what their, what, you know, the gamut of their writing is, or do you want something focused with the piece that they're giving you at the beginning? Or
yeah, I want to know what you're interested in. I want to know what your end game is. You know, you write mysteries, but you also, you know, you have a, I work with a novelist who also writes about golf. And I was like, that's the weirdest combination, but okay, great, let's do it. So he just said, like, I publish all the time with Sports Illustrated about golf, and I write particularly about Vijay Singh and other Indian golfers, which is a very specific thing. But I was, great, awesome, let's do it. And his novel is the total opposite. So, and short stories also. So, yeah, I mean, I want to know everything that you're interested in. If you're writing a genre, so if you're writing thrillers and mysteries, cozies, whatever, or romance, there tend to be agents who work on those specifically. So you might want to go to somebody who has better relationships. You know, I know sort of the big names in mysteries and romance, but that's not something I specialize in. So it's, you know, if you're writing sort of, If you plan to only write genre, it's, or sci-fi. Sorry, I left that out. Sci-fi, fantasy. If you write any of those, you might want to look, when you're looking for an agent, look for somebody who represents somebody more specifically, and say, I'm writing sci-fi. You know, everything I ever want to do is in sci-fi. I might write screenplays, but they might be, you know, it might be the next Battlestar Galactica. I don't know. But you might say, okay, this is what I'm interested in, and can you represent me? But yeah, I'd like to know up front, you know. I want you to write me about this particular project that you're sending to me, but also say, and I'm interested. And that may be something, you see how it feels depending on how long your query letter is. But you might also say, if that agent follows up, you might say, hey, this is a project I'm really working on, but there are 10 other things that I've got in a drawer that I'm excited about, and they're not all the same as this. So that might be a second conversation thing. It depends on sort of what you're sending. Does that help?
I'm a little confused about the blog world.
Yeah.
We were talking about that earlier, but I had, from a conference, I remember someone said, you know, start a blog. So I've started a blog, and I actually put some short stories up on there,
uh-huh,
and just talked to a few friends. And then at another conference, they said, don't, if you want to publish it, don't. So I took them off, and actually two of the short stories are what they got published. So it's like, and also, what is the difference between the world of, have like a three-part blog question?
Apparently.
Hey, also, another question about the blog is, how much writing do you save? Do you start a blog for a book that hasn't been published yet to gather followers? B, how much, if you're just going to do a blog to get followers, how much writing do you save for something you might want to put in a book?
Sure.
And what do you write just like that?
Sure. I mean, blogs tend to be not, well, yeah, let me say one thing about blogs. Don't blog unless you're going to do it regularly. Because if you put something up, and then 6 months later you put something else up, and then 6 months later you put something else up, it's hard to build something. You want something, yeah. You want to be up there at least once a week. You know, a couple of times a week is great. Blogs tend to be more nonfiction. I think if you intend to publish anything, it's probably not great to put it up on a blog, not finished at least, maybe a draft. It's not the end of the world. I mean, like, as I just said, Stuff White People Like was all stuff from the blog. That same friend, who's an editor now at Hyperion, also bought a book that was a blog where a woman took a picture of what she was wearing every day. I was like, I want to see that proposal. Like, who would buy that book? I don't know. That just seems weird, but okay. You know, so I think there are a lot of ways to use a blog, but I think if you don't, one, you have to devote a considerable amount of time to it. And fiction is hard. Just trying to think of a good answer.
It's so funny because I have so many things of so many nonfiction, you know, stories that, like you said, like in the drawer that I'm ready to, and then
sure,
fiction stuff, but it's like, how much is it worth it, or is it an important marketing tool to have a blog up all the time? Is that something?
It's not. I mean, I think it's helpful. I don't think it's absolutely necessary. Mm-hmm. So I think if it doesn't come naturally, if you want to save everything, it may be more important, like for what you're talking about, it may be more important to take those stories, finish them, publish them someplace else, you know, even if it's for free. I mean, you know, hopefully for money, but even if it's for free, maybe that's not the path that you go on. And I think everybody has to examine for themselves. I mean, I'm saying go blog, Facebook, tweet, don't, you know, think about what is appropriate for your work and your lifestyle, because I think that is the most important thing is you have to feel comfortable.
Really funny story on the blog, then you've wasted, you know, you've missed it on your... on the other, you know.
Well, it's not, it doesn't mean that it's not, I mean, how many people are following your blog?
Right.
A couple hundred maybe? You still have, you know, tens of millions of people, you know. Yeah, seven whole people. So there's still millions of people out there who haven't read it, so they would still enjoy the, you know.
Right.
And it could be something different too. So I think it feel kind of, see what feels comfortable, but if you feel like, oh, I can't, you know, I don't want to give that great story away, then maybe you save it for something else. And you can always take it down off your blog, as you did. You know, if it's something great and people are like, oh, save it, then you can always take it down. But yeah, I think the blog is a great public journal too. So I tend to, like, for a while I was keeping a blog about daytime television because I work from home. So I was, and Hoda and Kathy Lee, if you guys don't watch the fourth hour of the Today Show, do. The first 10 minutes is the best 10 minutes of television all day. It's so funny because they assume that nobody's watching them. And I may be the only person who is, but I kept a blog about it because it was so funny. But then nobody was reading it and I was just amusing myself. And I was like, I can just sit here and be amused. That's okay. But, you know, that's sort of, you know, that for me, it was a journaling kind of thing. It was the cataloging this craziness I was watching for a couple of months, and that was funny. But at some point you go, okay, that's silly. So I was never going to write a book about it. So, although I should, they're very funny. They drink every day.
I was going to say, the main thing is drinking.
Drink every day. It's Thursday. It's, I forget, they have a drinking thing name for every day. It's very funny.
And Kathy drinks the most.
Kathy drinks the most. It's true. Yes.
You didn't tell us your preferences.
Oh, sorry. My preferences. I tend to like fiction, memoir, and within fiction, mostly literary fiction. So, and some commercial fiction. So. Some of your mystery romance.
So you wouldn't be averse to looking at a mystery?
I would not. And if anybody, this is my email address. Just tell, when you send, if you want, anybody can send me a note, anything, if you have some questions that I haven't answered here. Feel free to send me an email, and I'm happy to talk to you. And help you, even if it's not, your book is not something that I'm mostly interested in. So literary fiction, some commercial fiction, memoir, some narrative nonfiction. So things, books like Devil in the White City.
Well, that's really
historical. Seabiscuit. Yeah. Yeah. Narrative. Yeah. Narrative nonfiction. So nonfiction story told as if it were a novel. That's sort of what narrative nonfiction is like. So that sort of thing. That's what I'm mostly interested in. But also, if you want to go to just robweisbach.com, there are four other agents there who like different things, but you can read and see what they're interested in. You can always just submit. We have sort of a general submission, and then Rob goes through and sends it out to the people who are interested in that. So, yep. Yes. Yeah. Unless you're not sure. I mean, I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes. Mostly yes.
How about memoir?
Memoir, mostly yes. If you have a great idea and you're not really sure how to tie it all together, that's sometimes good. Or sometimes memoir is sold on proposal. So if you have, so for instance, I worked with a writer who... was telling, she wanted to write a memoir about breaking all 10 commandments. And so it was, but it was a really emotional journey. Yeah, it was not meant to be funny, which is the problem with it. But it was a really emotional thing. It was going to take her a year to write it. And she was like, can we just go out with a proposal? And so we had two really good chapters and chapter summaries and an overview and things like that. And that was perfectly acceptable. So yeah, depending on what the memoir is, you can send just a proposal.
Would you talk a little bit about just exactly how much internet presence is acceptable if you wanted to get your book actually in print publication?
Sure.
That's all. Just,
you know. Wait, do you want to expand on that just a little bit?
One example I can think of is that I do know of a blogger, and I don't read this blog, but I know of it, who was like doing a serial novel, like
sure.
a blog post
yeah.
every day,
yeah.
you know, another
yeah.
section. So once she got to the end of that, would that potentially be a novel that would then go into a paper book, or is it always
sure.
for every blog?
No, it can be, I mean, depending on the success of the blog, I mean, but she can set, she?
I think it was a she. I can't remember.
Okay. He, she. We'll say she. Since this is the Women's Writers Conference, she could very much say, send it out to, you know, send the link out to agents or editors or whomever and say, look, I had this great blog and it was a serial novel and I had this many followers and let's make it a print book. Or the alternative, this is something I didn't talk about, but we can talk about it now, was digital publishing. A lot of, so the dirty little secret is that you don't actually need an agent sometimes. If you want to publish, a lot of people self-publish now, and a lot of people e-publish. So if you want, a lot of books can be just e-books, and you can do it through Amazon, and you can have a book on Kindle, and you're done. So there are some things. And then sometimes if those books are really successful, so there have been a lot of situations in which a book is a really successful ebook, and then a print publisher says, wow, this book sold 1 million copies in an ebook. We want to print some. Yeah. So there are a lot of ways sort of in, and then there are some other great stories. I'll come back to finishing answer that. There are some other books of great self-publishing stories like The Shack. Do you guys know that book? Huge bestseller, self-published. Still Alice was another book that was self-published. Huge, huge, huge seller. And then a publisher bought it. So both of those situations, the writers took it upon themselves to publish, market, sell. And they were so successful that you know, one of the big six picked them up and sold them.
How many would you have to sell to be successful?
Tens of thousands. Yeah.
And how much does it cost to have an agent?
It's free.
You took my book.
I don't make any money unless you make money. So yeah, agents tend to take 15% of whatever you sell. So, but to get back to e-publishing, yeah, I mean, I think if you have a finished blog, you know, that's a serial story, and it's the same thing if you had this serial story someplace, you know, in a literary magazine or something like that, there is still a potential to be bound together and printed. I don't think it's absolutely necessary. But
you.
To have a web presence.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was wondering, like, in terms of having, what if you wanted to do with a blog? If you had other books to sell, and you had like a serial story going, that would bring
sure.
writers in. That might be a way to do a blog. That would
sure. Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. And you can try it out too. I had a friend who wrote, do you guys know Choose Your Own Adventures?
Yes.
Okay. I had a friend who was writing a novel that way, where she would say, she would write a chapter, and at the end of the chapter, she would say, the main character was Chloe. Do you want Chloe to do this, or do you want Chloe to do this? And then she would take a vote, at all of the people who followed her blog, and then they would say what it was, and then 2 weeks later, you'd come back and see what Chloe did. And it was incredibly clever, but, you know, she hasn't finished it yet, but it's a good idea. You can steal it. She didn't copyright it.
How important is a sense of place in literary fiction, or how much are you interested in that in the writers that you represent? Is that something that agents are generally interested in?
Absolutely.
Since we are the Kentucky.
The Kentucky writers. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Sense of place, sense of time, and character development. I think those, particularly literary fiction, they tend to be quieter stories. There don't tend to be, you know, if there are explosions and things, that moves the plot along. For literary fiction especially, yeah, having a place. And, I mean, being in Kentucky is a great place. You know, a lot of novels take place in New York, and like, ugh, anybody could be from New York. Kentucky is very unique, and that's something that not everybody knows about. So I think you have a way to describe place in such a way that is very, you know, palpable. Yeah. More questions? Please.
I like that you used like water for elephants as an example. But then you talked about, you know, two key things, a good writer and a unique story.
Yeah.
But yet you have to be careful, and going back to the young adult as well, Potter. You know, everybody and his brother all of a sudden thought they could write a fantasy novel, and you know, is everybody and his brother suddenly think they're like Water for Elephants because it's a circus story.
Sure.
Or a carnival or a...
Yeah.
You know, that's a fine line between just being...
Sure.
Copying. So...
Yeah.
Is it the uniqueness of the story that makes it...
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, you know, like if you were looking for a really good Water for Elephants...
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be a good idea because it's a circus, but maybe it's a good idea because it's a relationship...
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a fine, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Contradicting each other and...
Well, it's interesting. Yeah. There have been definitely themes. There were magicians, vampires, zombies.
I'm so sick of vampires.
Who isn't? Who isn't? I'm sick of vampires too. I mean, those are the three. The next one, if anybody is writing,
say, what's the next one?
The next one, ghosts.
Ghosts.
Yeah. Yeah, so everybody write a ghost novel. You'll get it published, I promise. I take that back. I can't guarantee anything. I will like a story if it has a compelling hook. If it's a vampire, I'm not going to like it because it's a vampire novel. I'm not going to like it just because it's set in a circus. And I think Water for Elephants is so different. I mean, one of my favorite writers is Wallace Stegner, who, my favorite book is The Angle of Repose. And great book. Everybody should go buy it. It's a great book, but it's a quiet story. It's a story of a couple. Yeah. Yeah, it's a couple. The husband is a geologist. The woman is an illustrator. She's from Boston. He makes her go out west. You know, it's a quiet story. Things happen, but it's about their love. It's from the point of view of their grandchild looking back. So it's the generational look, you know, there's a lot about that, but it's a quiet story and it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that my parents are from California. It doesn't, none of that matters, but the writing is beautiful. The story is simple, but elegant, and the characters are very well developed. So there's a lot to that, and there's a tension because she's, you know, a city girl in the frontier, and there's something there.
Well,
but
it's interesting, just as you described that, right away I got a vision of that old great classic, Joy in the Morning.
Mm-hmm.
You're
I haven't read it.
Too young for that.
Yeah.
But that's exactly the essence of that old fabulous classic.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Based on the length of the query letter, if you do write something that you said is kind of a quiet story,
yeah,
then how would you market that in something so short, a query letter, because so much of it is based on the kind of writing and the development of the characters? I don't know how you would.
Well, there has to be some kind of tension in your book, right? So I would say this is the tension in my book, and these are the characters. It's sort of hard, but I think figure out what is the most quiet or not. There's something at the heart of your book. Could be a character. I mean, the theme, obviously, or the tension, or whatever the end game is. You know, say this is what the story is about. this is the character or this is the place. So there's a writer who has written a book set in a small town, and the town is as much a part of this book as the characters. And it's a generational story, and there's a lot to it. And so that is enough. You know, there's this town that is very quirky, whatever. You say, you tell me a little bit about that, even if it doesn't, even if there isn't a ton of action, you give me something to grab onto, a town, a character, something, and just give me a little bit of line that makes me say, wow, this looks really interesting. I really want to know what this person does. I really want to see what happens in this town. I really want it. So, yeah, yeah, I'm sure there's something in there and you can grab onto it. Yeah.
So one page is what you should get.
Yeah. Yeah, one page. Yep.
I've kind of always been curious, like, how you get into this industry. So did you have, like, a marketing degree, or, like, how did you get into
dumb it? Luck. No. I'm from Texas, and I grew up in Austin. I double majored in English and history, and I went to the University of Denver has a publishing program called the Denver Publishing Institute. Yep. There's also one at Columbia and one at NYU. So I went to Denver, and then I moved to New York and got a job. So that's how I got into it. Yeah. Anybody else? Surely you must have more questions. Yes. You can put it in there. It doesn't compel me to read it or not compel me to read it. Because honestly, I'm like, I have no idea how big that is. But okay, sounds good. Yeah, I mean, you can include it. I'm sure some agents will want it, but it doesn't matter to me. Yeah. Anybody else?
I keep seeing the term upmarket fiction on agents' websites. Could you define that?
Yeah, I'm not really sure I know what that means. I think it means like sort of more literary upmarket. So there are a lot of terms that didn't exist 5 years ago. So women's fiction, that's like Jodi Picoult, Jennifer Weiner, sort of that something that was probably called chick lit maybe a few years ago. It's not, I mean, it doesn't, it's just women books about women by women for women. I don't know what that means, but you know, I upmarket fiction probably tends to be more like literary fiction. Yeah. Anybody else? Yep.
Some people, I'm not listening to them. Obviously, or I wouldn't be here. But have said, well, if you're not, you know, Mackenzie Phillips, or you're not, who else is well known? Who's recently published memoirs? And obviously, that's not true because of Crazy for the Storm. But
sure,
if you could speak to that, that would be great.
Sure. If you have a compelling enough story, doesn't matter who you are. It helps. I mean, yeah, obviously tons of people bought Mackenzie Phillips' book. But yeah, Normal Said, who wrote Crazy for the Storm, who's one of Rob's clients. Nobody knew who he was. Jeanette Walls, who wrote The Glass Castle, was a huge bestseller, and nobody knew who she was. I mean, they knew her sort of as a gossip columnist, sort of celebrity reporter for MSNBC, but I don't go to MSNBC for my celebrity news. I don't know about you guys. So I didn't know who she was. No, you know, the media, it didn't help her get on Oprah. Her story helped her get on Oprah. So, yeah.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
What are the top, like, 5 literary journals that are really respected and read?
Oh. I mean,
like you said, you know, like I know the Paris Review and the New Yorker.
Sure, yeah. The New Yorker, Paris Review, thank you. The Atlantic. Anybody else have some idea?
Georgia Review
is good.
Georgia Review.
Yeah. Yeah. Kenyon, I think. I'm not as good at that. Sorry. Yep.
Question, because you said you came from
publicity.
Mm-hmm. Our person last year, who was fabulous, mm-hmm, and full of great information, really said publicity doesn't really sell the books. Publicity tours, I should say.
Oh, yeah.
Don't sell books.
I agree.
You know, only the rare occasion that gets on Oprah. Mm-hmm. And that was my question, is you coming from publicity,
sure,
it's really more this other subtle publicity that you've talked about that's really going to make it happen, not...
Well, tours. If she said tours don't sell books, that's true.
she said that was just forget that.
That is true. Yeah, I think a lot of that's a good thing.
She said they could be celebrities and going on Coda and Kathy Lee isn't going to sell it.
Right? No. That's no.
She did say that.
She said going on the Today Show doesn't sell books.
Well, she didn't say that it didn't sell books, but you'd be surprised how many people, you know, that even have name recognition that doesn't necessarily make their books sell.
I'd have to disagree with her. If she's talking about publicity tours, yes,
she did.
I agree. Publicity tours do not tend to sell books, mostly because what publicity tours tend to be is a writer in a bookstore
signing.
Unless you have a particular connection to that area, no, who's going to come out? You know what? It is unpleasant. There's actually a whole movie about that. People, I don't know. I toured plenty of writers. A friend of mine is Jimmy Carter's publicist, book publicist. He's doing like a 25-city tour because he's President Carter. I mean,
you have to do that.
No, he does.
Oh, he does.
So, yeah, I totally disagree with the celebrities. I mean, if you get President Carter in a room, he's going to sell 1,000 books. If he's not there, he's going to sell 100. But
there aren't enough people who followed him all these years and all the other things he's written that they're not going to just automatically want to buy his book.
No, they want him to sign it.
Okay. Thank you. That's interesting.
Yeah. But like me in a bookstore, who cares? Yeah, I mean, who cares?
Well, I've actually seen where a celebrity shows up and no.
It happens. It happens because if you don't have the local media, I mean, I'm doing publicity for a writer who's she's a famous writer online. She writes for salon.com. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. She's very famous. She's written a book. She has an event in DC, no media. And I was like, this is unacceptable. Like, we should either cancel the event or like try and get media in 2 weeks. And so we're trying to get media in 2 weeks, you know? So it's a little bit of, this looks like we're going to she's going to jump in. Publicity absolutely sells books. Touring doesn't, unless what I tended to do was I tried to get writers to conferences, festivals, you know, so the LA Times is a great book fair. That's great. Chicago does Printer's Row. You guys might do something similar. Something like that where there is already an audience going there.
Gotcha.
So it's already built in. You don't have to say like, oh, it's raining. I got my kid's soccer practice. Oh, I don't feel like it. You know, oh, I don't want to go. I don't care. Her book was great. You know, that's the problem. Or I used to work with a lot of women writers, and you'd be surprised, like the junior league luncheons are fantastic. You sell 300 books in like 20 minutes. It's awesome. Yeah, I would be like, you're doing 12 junior leagues. And they're like, what? I'm like, I'm telling you, you're going to sell a lot of books. So anyway, do we have time for one last question, or are we done?
Well, it just seemed that the focus on publicity was a perfect segue.
Oh, perfect. Oh, yes.
Come back tomorrow because I did just want to thank you and say
sure.
that we are out of time.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, tomorrow I will be talking about publicity.
This has been a presentation of the Kentucky Women Writers Conference and the University of Kentucky. Copyright 2010, all rights reserved.